Hi Sandra, recently I've been looking at the topic of magic, and it is really intriguing. This came to be because we are organizing a little get-together called a magic meeting. if you have a magic meeting, nobody knows what it's really about. And it will be magical because everybody knows that that's the title of it. And it will be a meeting, so there's magic in that too. And in that sense, the word magic meeting is like what in physics or mathematics would be called a strange attractor. You cannot see what's doing it, but it's bringing things together. You also know that it is a meeting, but you know that there's something very different going on. The unknown comes into the story. The exciting, the inspiring comes up into the story. And still, nothing is defined. As is, many people have already responded to this meeting, and basically in blind faith, in blind trust, in great hope, and full of inspiration, decided that they want to join in. And that is magical already. In my understanding, magic is when things unfold, when things have more meaning, as a consequence they also have more value, more significant, more clarity. There's just this moreness of it. It's a bit like looking at art. If for me art is something you look at it and you do not see what you're looking at. Instead, the mind starts to unravel it. It is as if you click on a zip file, and through the work of art, you start to see the universe in different ways. Your mind is unlocked by the artwork and starts to see again, start to explore again, start to play again, start to discover again. So the artwork gets you out of the mind lock into the realization of reality, the realization as an activity. And so, as a consequence of that meeting, with that invitation, with that title, I started to wonder, well, what do I know of magic? What do I think of magic? Evidently, the whole Western culture has this traumatic experience of the witch hunts. Everybody's told about the witch hunts, that there were witches and that they were killed because they were demon worshippers. Well, with the stories that we have already done, we know that the demon is just the reflex, and that hell is just the suppressed and hidden away reflex. And when you look at the history, then the people who were burning the witches, they were doing the rituals. So essentially, maybe from that perspective, they were just simply trying to get rid of the competitions. Maybe even more bluntly, that the guys who wanted to take control wanted to get rid of the girls who had the control, because the witches were the wise women of the villages who knew how to use the herbs for healing and who knew how to heal society by restoring balance within the people and between the people. And that is basically what the slave masters in the Roman church, Rome, slave society, had learned in Egypt. The pharaoh, the god player, pretending that he could determine your life and reality. It's a slave master model. So maybe the witch hunt was essentially the slave master trying to get rid of the free thinker, as the book The Mist of Avalon also presents it. The Roman male control trying to get rid of the matriarchal society. Many other cultures talked about that. So maybe we need to look at this whole story of witch hunts in a different way and realize that it is about traumatized people. The narcissist, psychopath, the sociopath trying to take control over the others by burning witches. Basically, nothing to do with it. And of course, if you look at the whole witch hunt story, it's a typical narcissistic, psychopath, sociopath drama because they say, if we now tie you with rocks and throw you in the river, and if you drown, then you're, well, it's a pity. If you float, it's a witch. Whichever way it went, you were killed. So the proof was a fictitious proof. It was a nonsensical proof. It couldn't do anything. typically also, if you understand how swimming works, if people are stressed, then they will sink. And as the story was then, if you sink, you're a witch. And if you float, then you're not. If the people are relaxed, they will float, because their body decontracts and has more buoyancy. So if you look into that kind of stuff, there's a lot of deeper level connectednesses throughout it. But still, it is not about magic, not about understanding magic. It is more about narcissistic manipulation. And at the core, the experience of fear. So let's disconnect the understanding of the word magic from the concept of fear. And then in my exploration, as the starting point, I use the term magd, which supposedly from Sanskrit means the power to create, or the creative potential. Magd is then something universal. And in exploring that idea of, okay, what might magic mean? What could magic be? I landed on that concept of magd, and then from that concept of magd, the creative potential, in my mind everything started to unravel and everything started to fall in place. It's a bit as looking at that word work of art, seeing the universe. I looked at the word magic, I saw the word magd, and then all of these thoughts started to fall in place. So I created a series of exploratory texts with various titles, and they're all interconnected. So in writing those texts, I basically went into, in mathematics you would call it a specific vector in a multivectorial, multidimensional domain, and as a result can have the tent poles by which I can unfold a tent so that there is a space for that idea of magic. And let me just list some of the titles which I started to work with. One of them is called Utopia. Utopia is, say, the opposite of utopia. Utopia is from the Greek word utopos, not space, so it is essentially nowhere land. Utopia is a different thing, it is the good place. So if you operate magic, then you realize that reality is a space in which you can operate magic. Magic then is actually equivalent to the ability to use freedom of choice, and that connects to the principle of universal creation, and that we can then connect to tetrionics. So essentially you can say that tetrionics helped us understand that this universe is in ongoing creation. Tetrionics shows how creation goes from the quantum level to the atomic, to the molecular, to the material. In our body we can see how that works. We can see how the cells use information to operate quantum and linear and circular quantum flux, to slice and splice molecular fragments, to create the molecules that the cells work with, to create the molecules that the cells communicate with, to create the molecules that the cells build the body with. So in the living cell, we can see that the cells operate the principle of universal creation, and in that sense the cells operate magic. The idea, the information is materialized. The general understanding of magic is that you have a thought and suddenly it is there. And yes, that's what our body does. You have a thought and suddenly it's there. You have a thought and then your body knows what to do with the thought. The body collects the rocks for the thought. The body assembles the rocks for the thought. And then suddenly you have a bridge by magic. So it doesn't mean that magic is without effort. It simply means that magic is the ability to put a thought into manifestation. So once you are able to do that, the place where you are, you can transform into a good place. If in the place you are, you're stuck on the desert, there's the ravine, and on the other side of the ravine, there's the fertile place, and then build a bridge, connect the desert to the fertile place. You can still keep on living in the desert, but suddenly it's a good place to live, because you just have to cross the bridge which you have built by magic, and harvest the fruits and the apples and whatever on the other side of the ravine, and as a result can start planting them in the desert and pee on it if necessary to bring the water there, and in that way bring the desert to bloom. So you create a utopia, essentially you plant paradise by using magic. I've already implicitly talked about the natural nature of magic, the understanding that magic is absolutely natural and absolutely positive. Like any hammer, you can abuse it, but if you use it well, if you know what it is, what it can do, it is a power tool. Magic is a power tool, specifically a power tool of the mind, specifically a power tool in the body, because magic is based on understanding tetrionics. I refer to tetrionics because it is the most beautiful, elegant, and coherent model of universal creation, what I have discovered. And yes, I went through engineering school. I've seen a lot of those models. And in tetrionics, you can just look at the pictures and see how it works. So in tetrionics, you can see how the universe works at the quantum level, and how from the quantum level, the tetrions are formed, the atoms, the molecules, the materials are formed. And as tetrionics says, only the quantum field can form and move matter. Quantum field is also a form of consciousness. So then we can understand that it is with our consciousness connected to the consciousness of the quantum field that we interact with the quantum field. And from the quantum field, we can then do that stuff of changing atoms, changing the charge, changing the polarity, which actually we then call a decision. We change our involvement. And once we have changed our involvement, then we have created, say, a molecular domain with a circulation of thoughts, belief, and ideals, which we can uphold, maintain, or garden and change, transform and embellish and enhance. And then by nurturing that idea, that ideal in us, that decision which we took in the quantum domain becomes a conviction in our body, and then in our body we can ripen it until we carry it out. We then are the seed of cosmic creation in the environment. We then are the magician which turns the thought into matter. And we then become the manifestors of our dream. And that means that our body is the magician. Our body is doing the magic. Our body operates by magic. Our body operates in and from magic, because our body exists in magic. It is a quantum dynamic. Same way as the tetrionics explains that the universe is formed, our body is formed. Our body is integral part of the universe. It operates by the principles of the universe. And that means that magic is nothing else but using the principles of universal creation. That brings me back to that Sanskrit word magd, the creative potential. So magd is really literally that in our body we are creators in creation, and by definition we are tapped into the field of universal creation, and by being connected to that, we are an expression of that. We can express that, and then we have freedom of choice so that we can choose how we do that. So in living, we learn how to operate freedom of choice. In living, we also learn how to operate magic. So I no longer shun to use the word. I now simply realize that magic is the art and the act of operating freedom of choice. Magic is living. Living is learning how to operate freedom of choice. Magic is actively using freedom of choice. And, of course, we like learning to walk, we're learning to pee, learning to poo. We learn magic by trial and error, by making mistakes and learning from mistakes. So that is the mechanism of magic, or the mechanics of magic. Essentially, it is simply that you can see that the principle of tetrionics we experience in our body as the principle of life. The change of the quantum for us is the freedom of choice. And as Tetrion shows, the change of the quantum then leads to the materialization of the manifest universe. The alchemists already had a good understanding of that. And when you look closer, you can see that in your body the same happens, that the cells are actually the magicians, which are then using that cosmic information to change the quantum flux, to change the way atoms form molecules. And the cells then actually use those molecules to build the cells, to communicate between the cells, to build the body, and that the body is then the unfolded manifestation, or let's say the magicking, of the intent or the thought of that first cell, which you got from your parents, from their parents, from their parents, and so on. So that magic has been going on in us for a very long time. With that magic, we live in the outer world. So by that magic, we act, interact with the outer world. And in using the magic, we then can create this utopia, this wonderful place. The only thing that we need to learn is to have a good intent in using magic, so that by our intent, we, first of all, we know that we are magicians, that we are creators in creation. Secondly, that we know that we have freedom of choice and we can muck it up, and we can learn from our mistakes. So doesn't much matter that we can make mistakes, because we're here to learn to not make mistakes. So mistakes are important, as cybernetics teaches. So in using magic, yes, we will make errors, and then we discover that what we do with magic is actually a projection of our intent, and that the act of magic is actually an extension of intent in consciousness, and that magic is not in the outer world, but magic starts in the inner world. As I said in another talk, war is not between people, because war originates within people. Likewise, faulty magic doesn't originate in the environment, but it originates in the intent. And Bill Tiller and many others have been looking at intent. And what we are talking about now, of course, is the purification of intent and the realization that if you want to do magic, you need to understand how intent is connected to the conscious, the subconscious, the unconscious, and the out-of-conscious, which is the same as freedom of choice. If you operate freedom of choice, you create a decision, you create a conviction, which will create a reflex behavior. When you do that, you go from the conscious to the subconscious to the unconscious to the out-of-conscious, and that means that when you do magic, you need to understand all those four levels. And once you do that, you can realize that in doing the magic, you might start with a conscious idea, but then you need to pursue that in a dream state, in the alpha brainwave level. So you can then follow that implication of that intent. What would happen if you had that thought and would act on that thought? With everything you know, what could come out of it? It's a bit like learning to play chess. And then you work it through all the moves and find out what could happen. And with everything you know, you come to a conclusion and say, okay, that might be a workable idea. I've talked about this before when we talk about freedom of choice and implementing freedom of choice. Now we're using exactly the same concept and simply calling it magic. So at the next level of magic, once you realize with everything you know, that idea could be magicked into something that can exist, you need to go to the deeper level. With everything you don't know, with everything that didn't work well for you, with everything that sort of went askew, and all of the memories that you have in your body of things that you have experienced, which went right and which went wrong, you now include the things that didn't go right. So you go to the level of the unconscious, and then you go to that deep meditation state, play out the same intent, and face the monsters. See what happens. Negotiate with the monsters, convince the monsters, find out where all these traumatic experiences you had could be overcome, resolve the traumatic experiences, see that there is always the other side to the story, and realize that with your intent, there will be consequences and repercussions on others and for the environment. So you cannot create a science without having the pollution. So as a scientist, as a magician, you're responsible. And you need to foresee that. So you need to not just have your dreams in your alpha brainwave level, but also go into your nightmares in the theta brainwave wave level and see how you need to transform that intent, or how you need to transform your beliefs and your convictions, how you need to transform what you hold to be real. Because if you hold things to be real, then there's no room for your realization. If there's no room for your realization, there's no room for your magic. You cannot improve on the universe as is by turning the desert into something different. So you then still need to go to the deepest level of the out-of-conscious, beyond what you know, beyond what you knew and denied, into what your DNA knows, all of your ancestry, all of the life that came before you. So in that deepest trance state, you can then test your intent and basically need to negotiate with the gods, or need to negotiate with the god, but creation itself. Say, well, I'm thinking of this, and how would that play out if I acted on that? So then, having talked with your gods of the Olympus, so to say, you then, which is also the level of the soul, you then need to go to the level of spirit, which is the level of universal creation. Now, what does the universe know? What do you know from the universe? And at that deepest level, what is taking place? So that's where you actually tap into where the magic is already happening, where creation is taking place. And then you go into this dialogue with creation of, hey, in this symphony that is playing now, I discovered this new instrument. I would like to try it out. When can I play it? That's where the religions don't say, well, thy will be done. Basically, you realize that you're always dealing from your out-of-conscious level, which is where you're universal, because your first cell is the universe in inverse, that you're always facing yourself. Jung came up with ideas like that. So that you're always confronting yourself, you're always testing yourself, you're always realizing yourself. So the magic that you do is essentially the magic of your creation and your realization, which makes it very powerful, of course. And then it also means, that's the text of the unknown magic, that when you're doing magic, when you're experiencing magic, when you realize what magic is, there is that realization that magic can only come from the out of conscious, because the magic can only come from the tetrionic quantum field. If the quantum field forms and moves all forms of matter, and the quantum field is a field of consciousness with an intent, then that consciousness is the basic factor. The intent is just a vector rather than a factor. A factor means, in Latin, means the maker. And a vector is the carrier. So when you go from a factor to a vector, from the maker to the direction of the intent, then you also need to calibrate that intent in the settings that you know, and outside of the settings that you know. It needs to be universal, so it needs to be able to go beyond your own interest. And magic which only serves your interest is called black magic, because it comes from a dark hole in the soul, a traumatic experience, because you're locked in, you cannot look beyond your selfish self. We talked about that before. And so when you get out of that dark hole, you automatically get colorful magic and even all-colored white magic, because your intent then is befitting for everything that is. So what you're then doing is realizing that consciousness, when it takes a direction, let's say an energy, it is an intent. But then when you hold on to that intent, you turn the energy into a time base, you go from energy to time, and then it becomes a will. And then when you act on that will, it becomes an action, a magic act. So you've gone from consciousness to intent to will to an act of manifestation. And that then puts everything we do back in the terminology of magic, or puts the terminology of magic back into everything we do. And then everything simplifies so much, because there's nothing magical about magic. But it is something that we normally do not think about. That's what the text of the unknown magic addresses. But we do better to think about it, because as it comes from the out of conscious, if we want to know what we are doing, we need to include that. And this is where I would like to connect it to a personal experience, because a long, long time ago, I did magic. I had an intent, and I wanted something to happen. It did happen, and basically it scared me shitless, so to say. I realized that if I, by my intent, was able to do that, I needed to know what I was doing, and I needed to prevent that by having something that worked for me, I didn't create something that backfired for other people or for everybody else. So I locked down my magic at the exact same moment that I confirmed that magic worked, and I put a condition on it. I will not do this unless I know what I'm doing. So what I'm talking about today is unlocking that magic, unlocking that decision, because now I realize what it is about, what I am doing, how it is done, because it needs to connect these four levels of consciousness. So that then brings me to that text of pure, clean, wholesome magic. Pure, clean, wholesome magic simply addresses that we can get rid of all the negative connotations of magic. We can get rid of the superstitions surrounding magic. We can realize that magic is literally the creative potential. It is quite definitely the act of creation. Now with the understanding that our body cells already do that, our body cell is the magician. Our body is the unfolded cell, and our body is the magician. So you are the magician. So you are a creator in creation. And to do pure, clean, wholesome magic, it simply means that your intent needs to connect to that of others, to basically everybody, to essentially every living being, and to the universe as a whole. And that means that there is that need to understand that you're not an individual, but you're the counterpart of every relationship that you're in, and that you're also an essential human in the body of humanity. And that as a human in humanity, you're a creator in creation, so you're a God being, a divine being, and you're actually manifesting, expressing, representing that. You're the ambassador of the creative principle. You're the magician for and of the universe. And that essentially comes down to the text with the title, Being I God. I God is the principle of creation. I God, the integration of the generation, operation, destruction of anything. In the most basic form, it is the quantum flip. In a more generalized form, it is the creation of a boundary or a distinction. In a more practical form, it is the creation of an intent or a decision. And in the way we live it, it is the creation of a reflex, which also requires the elimination of the reflex when it no longer functions. So the I God principle is that pivotal act of creation. It's that zero point of the vortex rotation of the quantum flux change. And so being I God is simply the affirmation that when we exist, we are beings, body, mind, soul, and spirit. But our foundation is in spirit. Our consciousness is part of the universal consciousness. We are in that universal consciousness. And when you are in that universal consciousness, you can see that everything connects. I've had a couple of people and doing some techniques. They suddenly were in that space of omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient. They were perceiving all time and all space and all that is as one whole. The filter of the mind had unlocked, and they were at that level of spirit being. And a lot of traditions talk about that and advocate that we need to be that. The exercise of dying before you die, the magic mushroom, the baptism, all of these other techniques to help people unlock from their mind lock are aimed to do that. So that people realize that we are one in spirit. Of course, you have your body, and your body is connected to everybody. All of the cells in the body are connected to your first cell, which is that connecting point to humanity and to all life forms. And so in our body, we have that individuation of universal consciousness, which is then called the soul. And in that soul experience, we are still connected to spirit, everything that is, but we are also connected to earth, as it is now here. And then our body is the pivot between the two. So the potential of universal creation in spirit, and the earth in its practical concreteness, underfoot and at our hands. And then our soul is that intent in us by which we can then choose which part of universal creation we want to embody in our life and in our being. The being I God is that we are actually doing that. Our soul is then an intent acting on behalf of the universe, and our conviction is the way that intent is carried out in our body. Our body is then the container, the grail of that conviction. It's the womb for birthing that new intent as a new manifestation on earth. And the new manifestation is not a baby, but it can be that bridge which I talked about before, anything that you can create. And in that way, the earth is the canvas in which you can create anything you wish to create. That's the power of magic. And the art of magic is that you can choose to create things which fit into the world that is. And in doing so, you always need to create that principle, use that principle of I, God. You need to be able to generate, to present that idea. You need to be able to operate it. You need to be able to maintain it. But you also need to be able to destroy that creation, that manifestation, if it doesn't work. And likewise, if people have left creations behind which no longer work, they need to be destroyed. And in the same way, if there are beliefs that people have in a culture that no longer work, they need to be denied, which is also a form of destroying. We talked about that before. And of course, that also means that if you have reflexes or beliefs or convictions or choices, decisions within you which don't work, they need to be destroyed too. So the act of magic creation is also an act of purification and also an act of healing. And that brings me to, yeah, basically I've gone through all of these topics here. There are more to come, but essentially let me summarize it. For what I see, magic simply is the application of the principle of Magd. Magd is the potential for creation, the creative potential. Tetrionics explains that the creative potential is what works in the universe, at the foundation of the universe as a whole. And when we work that, we create consequences in our environment. By understanding how Tetrionics works in our cell, we can also understand how it works in our body. And then in our body, we can see how the act and the art of magic actually takes place. What Tetrionics describes for the transition from consciousness to energy to time to space, from quantum change to atoms to molecules to matter, we experience in our body as the relation between consciousness, the electromagnetic atomic domain, the chemical molecular domain, and the material, the physical anatomic domain. So in our body, we see the magic at work. We see how magic works. We can learn from the body how to work the magic. And from that, we can then learn that what the cells can do is based on how we operate freedom of choice. So that's where we can then immediately connect it to freedom of choice. And that's why I'm so glad that I now have been possible to formulate freedom of choice as that transition from choice to decision to conviction to reflex. Because in understanding that, we can also see how conscious becomes intent, becomes will, becomes a reflex or a result. And in that way, we can then affirm what the alchemists said. They called it fire, air, water, and earth. System theory calls it information, transformation, process, and space or structure. And in that sense, we now understand that magic is simply the transmutation from thought into manifestation. Yeah, maybe I'll just leave it at that. Magic is that your thoughts matter, and when you materialize them, you have to live with the consequences, so you better know what you do. Thank you.